Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Switches. I am Dorian Wallace, joined as always by my lovely sister, Raina Starr. How you
Hello.
Doing?
Hello! Oh, fucking hell. You know, you better just, like, say hello and let me do the disclaimer and do the shout-out, because gone.
Okay. So let me do the you know what? I'll do the disclaimer and the shout-out. We are not a PG. You know what? No, you do it better. I like the way you do it. I do.
Okay,
I like the way you do it. You do it so perfectly.
All right. Well, I don't know about perfect, but I do it with attitude like I do most things. All right, everybody, listen up. If this is your first time listening to Desperate House Switches, this is not a PGG or even R-rated show. We curse, we swear. I say everything that comes out of my mind through my mouth. Yes, that's how I said it, and that's actually how I meant it. So if you have anybody who is offended easily that you don't want offended, I don't know. You may have people you do want offended because I'm good for that. children, anybody who you don't want to hear the filth that will come out of my mouth because I promise you tonight it will come out. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. If you have not gotten them out of the room, you're too motherfucking late because I am ready. Give you a shout out.
There you go. Okay, let me give a shout-out to my cousin Jessica up in New Jersey. I love you, Jess. I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. And I did that backwards. But whatever.
Yep.
It's that kind of fucking year already.
Okay,
anyway,
so five,
go.
The five, yeah, launch, bitch, launch. Okay, so first I have to give a shout-out to the wonderful Dorothy Martin, who created a wonderful mixture called Rich Bitch Oil. You know, I love it. It smells amazing. Isn't it good? Day, I told you. I had to get two bottles because I was afraid to be about it, and we all know I'm addicted to that woman's stuff because she's amazing. Let's see. What else? It has been a day from hell. Okay. So I wait. As we all know, Raina works in the city, lives in the country, and the city, usually drives into town on Friday morning. Raina woke up this morning. Why am I talking about myself in the third person? I'm not a boxer. Anyway, so I wake up this morning, and everywhere there is ice. There is ice everywhere. There is ice on the car. There is ice on the road. The temperature is not going to get above freezing for several hours. And I'm like, oh, hell no. So I send off an email to my boss, and I'm like, hey, it's icy here. And my boss is like, well, don't risk your life. Play it by ear. Because I was like, I really need to come in today. And my boss is like, well, yeah, but, you know, if it's dangerous, don't be a dumb bitch. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Don't be a dumb bitch and put yourself at risk. So, you know, I don't understand why companies need to change a system that's already fucking working to a system that has so many glitches that I can't even make this bitch work. So I'm sitting there, and something that normally took me an hour to do every week took me from 2 p.m. till 6:45. Yes, I have been doing the same shit for 4.5 hours, for 4 hours and 45 minutes. I'm like, really?
Real easy.
And to be honest with you, that was just the entry part. I haven't even done the printing part, which is good for another 15, 20 minutes. Thank goodness that part didn't change. But you know, you're wearing an old woman out. I am not as young as I used to be. When I was in my 20s and 30s, that might have been okay. But you know what? Once you hit your 50s, it's like, oh, fuck that. I need things easier, not harder. I said harder. Actually, there are some things I need harder.
Separate issue.
Okay, so I mean, really? Really? Oh, and shout out to our buddy, David Salisbury, who we love. David, we love you. Thank you for appreciating an old woman's sense of humor about her vibrator. If y'all didn't listen to last week's show, y'all need to listen to last week's show because apparently I did a diatribe on one of my old vibrators and I miss it and I wish I could get another one just like it. But apparently they don't make Killer One in the shape of Santa Claus anymore. I don't know why that is. Since when did we get the... I didn't realize Santa was sacred. I'm just saying, you know, it was shaped like Santa and had a little bear, and it was awesome. But anyway, so,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, now your sister has a new mission. I will find you a Santa-shaped dildo.
I don't want a Santa-shaped dildo. You want to know why? Because the one that you and our brother took me to buy? Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I took my sister and brother with me to help me pick a vibrator. Don't judge.
That was fun.
Don't judge. You wish your family was like ours. I'm just saying. Yes, it was fun. It was hilarious. Unfortunately, our brother was looking for his needs as opposed to mine. You and I were on the same page. Well, I mean, you know, he has different things that he likes in his dildo.
Yes.
Anyway, well, as we all do. But you know what? It was a mission for me. But anyway, so I'm just freaked out because of all this shit going on, and I can't seem to get a grip. I can't seem to get a grip on the direction that things are going in, and I'm just really tired. And on Saturday, yes, Saturday, like I said earlier, I have to go into the office. I'm like, really? Really? This is what I have to do? Really? It's like anything they can do in corporate America to make shit a little tougher. Now, having said that, I must also praise, again, Dorothy Morrison for something that I may have praised her for last week. I don't remember. Bear with me. I'm about to praise her yet again. So
praise Dorothy.
Praise Dorothy. I had put on, you know, the cash flow on the go oil.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. The cash flow.
Me
love
too.
It
smells
love
fantastic.
So I wasn't expecting anything. I just like the way it smells. And you're the one that turned me on to it in the first place. So I put it on Monday. Oh, no, I couldn't have said this yet because it didn't happen until this past Monday. So I put some of the cash flow on the go oil on my person. And do you know, like, before the end of the day, someone just gave me $50? Here, I have $50.
Nice!
Yeah! I was like, ah! So I emailed Miss Dorothy, and I was like, hello? I'm loving the cash flow on the go. Yay!
I'm telling you, now, out of all the oils that I have, because I'm growing my collection as well, I have the Ultimate Badass collection, and you gifted me the Cash Flow on the Go Mojo bag, which I absolutely love. You know, I do it like twice a week. You know, I feed it, and I put it on, and, you know, like all the time. But I have to say Rich Bitch is still my favorite. And I have been putting it on every day since I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And my, if you've been listening to the show, you know it's up and down with my husband and I. But today my husband got a raise, so yay. That is awesome. He got his year end, and he, you know, I cannot deny whatever we're going through, whatever. He is a hard worker. He's awesome at what he does. He got a great review, and he got a raise, so yay him. So, and yay,
well,
Dorothy, because this shit works. I'm telling you. You need to buy Dorothy's shit. Well, not her shit, literally. Anyway, I digress.
I don't even know where I am anymore. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, seriously, it has been, I mean, it just seems like, remember I said months ago, or 2 months ago, or whenever the hell I said it, because sometimes I say some shit that has meaning and I don't even know it yet. It definitely is the year of growth. It is a growth year, whether you want it to be or not. It's not easy. It's going to be painful. Everybody's going to go through something, apparently. I wish I could fix it for y'all, but I can't. Apparently, 2014 is the year of growth. I don't know why it just rolled out that way. So what was the year that we had that we said we were not going to, it was the no drama year. Wasn't that 2012?
I think actually that was 11.
Okay.
That was 2011.
Okay. So apparently every year we have a theme to go with the year. I know we've had the no drama year. I know we've had the personal power year. This year is the I'm not going to be nice to you anymore because I'm sick of trying with your year.
Yeah,
this is the year. Yes. Yeah, that's not the same thing. There's always going to be bullshit of some degree. But this is the year that I've decided that everyone who I was nice to that continued to be shitty behind my back, this is the year that that stops. I made up my mind. So basically, bitches will be falling at an alarming rate. Not because I'm doing anything. I'm just not putting up with it anymore is all I'm saying. All I'm saying is I'm going to stop being nice, and I'm going to cut you out of my life. That's what I mean. I am not the type of witch that says I'm going to put hex on you, I'm going to do this to you. I don't do that shit because I don't believe in that shit. It's like, you know, I think you can control other people through your own actions. That's all you get to control is yourself in a real sense, in a day-to-day sense. And you can change other people's reactions by what you do or how you react or by changing your methodology of what you're thinking. And you don't have to put up with bullshit. Sometimes it's just good to say, you know what? I gave you plenty of my time, and it doesn't matter what kind of relationship it is, friends, work, family, loved ones, lovers, whatever. There's a line that I've got, and it's really become well-established, and it's still in process, where you can only do so much to me until I am now like, fuck you, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm just done.
Yeah. Honestly, there's only so far you can push somebody until, you know, I mean, even the nicest person on the face of the earth, you can push them and push them and push them, and eventually they're going to snap. Now, I've actually just recently gone through this myself, and for the most part, you know, it's like I get in my little pissy moods, and I will get fired up, but I have never pushed to the point of just snapping. And I was recently pushed to the point of snapping, and now that person is trying to act like, you know, my snap negates anything else they did to cause that snap. And I'm like, oh, no, motherfucker, that's not the case.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and I think the desire for people to find a reason to abdicate responsibility is really beyond the pale. People just want justification for, and I can't justify myself half the time. How am I going to justify somebody else? I mean, really?
Exactly.
I do some shit that I'm like, what the fuck did you just do, you dumbass? And but it's true. If you can't look at yourself honestly and say, you know what, maybe that spell wasn't such a hot idea, or maybe I should have reacted this way, or maybe I should have reacted that way, or maybe I should have waited before I reacted at all. You got to be able to be honest with yourself, even if you can't be honest with anybody else. And unfortunately, I know a lot of people who can't be honest with anybody, especially themselves.
Yeah,
and that's kind of weird to be somebody who's on the path, like we are, and not have it together to just look in the mirror and say, you know what, this is the reality of the shit right here, you know, and deal with it. I'm still dealing with shit from 40 fucking years ago. I mean, you know, it's funny because the Throwback Thursday thing, I don't know who started it. I don't know how they started it. I don't even know why the fuck they started it, but you know, that Throwback Thursday post an old picture of yourself. Well, and it just so happens that, you know, I posted a picture of myself from 20 years ago, and I didn't even realize that the picture was almost exactly 20 years old. I think it's within a week of being exactly 20 years old, or 2 weeks. And I'm looking at the picture, and I'm thinking, wow, I was really happy. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, I was getting beaten up by my ex-husband. And you can, if you look really, and it's on my Facebook page, and if you look really carefully and you blow up the picture, not that I'm saying that's a fucking necessity, because it's not, but I, when I posted it, I was looking at it, and it was like, yeah, you could see me smiling, but if you look under my eyes, I mean, it looks like I'm recovering from being hit. But you know what? I will give my second husband, the abuser, some credit. He never hit me in the face. It's probably the only place he didn't hit me. Yeah, I never got punched in the face. I never got slapped in the face. Everywhere else was fair game, but he never hit me in the face. I don't know what that's about, but yeah. But you can see in my eyes.
Because he didn't want to leave evidence for everybody else to see.
Well, he left it all over my legs. That didn't bother him, and I used to wear skirts all the time. That did. For some reason, he wouldn't hit me in the face. I don't know. Maybe he thought if he broke my nose, he'd have to actually take me to a hospital, which is possible, you know. That twisted mentality, but, you know, it's just amazing when you look at somebody's picture and they seem to be happy. You don't really know what's going on. And I did a lot of thinking about that today because nobody knew I was being beaten, you know, for a really long time. So, you know, it just gave me pause to think about it. I don't fucking know. These things just occur to me. You just don't know, though. You don't know what's going on in somebody's real private life unless you're really, really close to them. And my abuser kept me isolated very, very well. Basically kept me hundreds of miles from family, kept me hundreds of miles from most of my friends, and knew everyone in my circle. It was amazing. It's like the few people that I had become friends with, he controlled the action. He was really good at it. Be careful of being manipulated. Because I'll tell you what, there are some master manipulators out there. Some crafty motherfuckers. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah. I know
Are you throwing cards? It sounds like you're throwing cards.
I haven't thrown cards. No, I was actually, I filled my e-cigarette. I filled the tank a little too much, so it's a little bit flooded. So it's a little bit loud. Sorry.
Speaking
but I am throwing cards right now.
Okay, so speaking of e-cigarettes, can I just rant for half a second?
Yes, you may.
What the fuck is this with Los Angeles? You know, I don't know if it's just... What is banning e-cigarettes? It has harmful chemicals, and children are going to get addicted to smoking. Excuse me, this is the device we use so that we don't smoke cigarettes, and now you want to ban that publicly? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, all of the states are going to fall in line. I guarantee you this state will do the same thing. It will fall in line like the rest of the states because, I'm sorry, my state, pussies, just saying, pussies can't deal. Can't deal with gay people, can't deal with pot smoking, can't deal with e-cigarettes. Can't deal with their own sexuality, can't deal with their children. These people are I love a lot of my fellow North Carolinians, but I will say some of the government people, really, really? Pat McCrory, get a clue, really? Come to the century, it's time. Everybody's got to grow the fuck up and really just leave other people alone. I'm just saying, I'm over it,
right? Why does everybody have to be in everybody else's business? And let me just, you know, throw out a disclaimer there because I actually posted about this the other day, and I got into a discussion. A lot of people are under the impression that there are a lot of toxic chemicals in e-juice is what they call it, you know, the water vapor that they use or that we use.
Yeah.
And it's propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin most of the time, and then added flavoring. These are all food-safe products approved by the fucking FDA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you want to look at the ingredients in a fucking cigarette, and there is formaldehyde, there's chloroform, there's all kinds of shit in cigarettes. And yes, you know, obviously, I have admitted I'm a former smoker. I just quit finally in August thanks to e-cigarettes. But,
yeah.
You know, even my husband is like, oh, well, you don't know what kind of chemicals are in that, and, you know, it's not regulated. And it's like, yeah, because the government has done such a fucking good job, such a bang-up job on regulating shit that, you know, Monsanto has their shit in all our fucking food.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a good thing that this is not regulated, that it's self-regulated, but the ingredients are right there. You know, and they are non-toxic. Yes, I will admit that, you know, studies have not been done on the effects over a long period of time. But we know what cigarettes do to you. They cause lung cancer. They cause emphysema. I saw my grandfather die from it. You know, it's infuriating. It's infuriating because the healthcare system, you know, maybe not the healthcare, but the insurance companies and the people who live and feed off the deaths of others and the illnesses of others, and these tobacco companies that are losing profits hand over fist because the e-cigarettes are more profitable. You know, it's like the friggin' cable companies. Get on board with it before your shit fucking sinks. Instead of fighting it because you want to keep your old ways, get with the new ways. You know, I don't understand why people are fighting this so damn bad. And I'm sorry, I'm off my soapbox.
No, I like it when you get on the soapbox, because I do. I love it. I do. I love it. It makes me smile. It makes me happy. It makes me go, God, she's adorable when she's angry. I don't know if anybody else says that. But honestly, I have to agree with you. And the fact of the matter is that the tar alone makes cigarettes 100 times more dangerous. Whatever the formaldehyde is that they're treating the paper with in regular cigarettes, that we already know what that does. At least this has fewer chemicals. I feel a little fucking safer. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I used to smoke something, but they used to use an asphalt to pave a road. At least I know I'm not smoking that anymore. All right, so there's some kind of relief. I mean, really? Seriously.
Yeah. And to the naysayers, you know, because, I don't know, I had somebody comment, and I think he was saying, you know, mostly in jest, but, you know, telling somebody, a former smoker that has gone to these, well, you should just quit. You know what? Love you, but fuck you. Because, you know,
I haven't
tried that 10 fucking times already. You know, I admire you for being able to quit cold turkey, but I can't because I have tried. I know, you know, it's like telling a heroin addict, you know, just stay away from it. Just don't buy any. Yeah, because that fucking works. Shut up.
No.
Jeez,
okay.
Crazy.
So I have to back you up for a minute on what you just said, because
okay.
The truth of the matter. Because, well, here's why. Everyone has something. For the most part, I don't. Let me rephrase. I don't know anyone that doesn't have something that controls them to a certain extent, whether it's food, coffee, your penis, whatever the fuck it is. Everybody, okay, your vagina too. All right, let's include all that. But everybody has something to a certain extent that rules them. I don't know one single person in my entire life that doesn't have something. that has a hold on them. Whether it's another person or a food or pot or a drink or peanuts or penis or whatever it is. It's very easy. And a lot of people will make, well, you know, people do comparisons all the time. That's, we're kind of built that way. You know, women compare each other's bodies. Who's the prettiest girl in the room? How many, I don't know any woman in the world that has not done that. Women do this instant size up. Men do this instant size up. Could I take that guy and kick his ass if I had to? Who's the baddest motherfucker in the room? Who's the best looking motherfucker in the room? Who's got the best body in the room? I mean, all of it. All of it. So when somebody says something to me like, when are you going to give up your e-cigarette? Now, everyone that knows that I smoke an e-cigarette knows that I used to smoke regular cigarettes and did so for 35 years. So, you know, and there are people who are addicted to things like exercise and, you know, yogurt and all that. And no matter what it is, don't judge what I'm hooked on because you don't think you're hooked on something just as harmful. Let me give you a really out there example. I know somebody, I've known this guy for several years, and he likes to be very judgmental of other people, very judgmental. And more than once he has said to me, okay, so you quit smoking cigarettes, when are you going to quit smoking the e-cig? I said, when are you going to quit jogging? Your knees are going to give out. Because the guy's a jogger. He's a biker and a jogger and a runner. And, you know, he fell off his bike not that long ago. And I said, I'm such a bitch. I said, oh. Going to give up that bike? See how dangerous that is? You almost got hit by a car, you dumb fuck. And, you know, and it's like, you know, but that's his high. That's what he's hooked on. He gets his endorphin rush. I don't know, maybe it's because his wife doesn't suck his dick anymore. She may not have sucked his dick ever. I don't know. But I'm just saying, you know, don't be so harsh on other people. Everybody's got a struggle, and you may not know about why, and you might not know how hard they've tried to get off of it. But it's really none of your business. If I'm not messing with your health or your income, why do you have anything to say to me at all?
Exactly.
I mean, you can. People are going to think what they're going to think, but when you start actually feeling the need to impart your brand of wisdom in that regard, unsolicited, I really want to tell you to go fuck yourself. I just feel, I just say the way I feel. All right, are we ready to read? I'm putting my glasses on. Hang on.
Okay.
All right, I'm going
to. She told me to hang on. She yelled at me for telling her to hang on.
Okay.
I did it.
And the reason I told you to hang on is because I want to do mine first.
Okay.
Okay, you ready? Because this is going to apply for a male and a female. There's two people going on here. And the first card is change is inevitable. In essence, everything you were comfortable with is about to go upside down. You will be able to weather the storm, but make sure you have everything you need. In essence, don't give away too much of your energy on things that are stupid. You're going to need all your emotional and mental resources because you're about to weather a really big storm, and I think it's financial. So you're going to make it through, but just hang in there. Okay. Oh, one of my favorite ones. Sometimes no is the right answer. How many, and this actually ties right back into the last part. You're so used to saying yes to people that you've forgotten how to say no. And no is a word that frightens you. And I've given this speech more than once.
Yes,
the word no,
I've heard it.
Is the most, you have heard my speech because you needed to fucking hear it and now so do other people. No is one of the most beautiful words. No is one of the most beautiful words in the world. No means you are not willing to sacrifice yourself just so somebody else will be happy. Because when you do that, you wind up resenting them one way or another. It is better for all concerned for you to just say no up front if it's something you really don't want to do. And, you know, there's this old thing about, well, sometimes not doing anything is the best decision. If somebody tries to pressure you into something that they want to do but you don't, you're always better off saying no. Always. Always. Because if you go through with it and then you're upset, you still have no one to blame but yourself. You got talked into it. I'm very big on the word no. I think it's one of the most perfect words in two letters that you could possibly have. Okay, so that's my speech on that. Step up and take the reins. This is, again, same reading, same two people. You're going to be required to do more at work because there are going to be some major changes. So you are going to be required to keep your shit together, which goes back to the other two cards of, you know, you're about to weather a storm. It's going to be a financial storm, but it's going to be okay. Say no to the things that are going to distract you from what you have to do now or what's very soon coming up. Okay, one more. A snake in the grass. There is someone on the team who is lying about you behind your back and telling all kinds of bullshit. You and the other folks around you are going to weed this person out, and you are going to cut them out. So don't worry. The bullshit that's being told right now, it will come back to bite them, and they will lose their job. Because apparently there's a lot of that energy right now of people losing what they thought was very secure. So it's okay to be secure as long as you don't take things for granted. But unfortunately, a lot of people have taken things for granted for way too long, and things are about to change. And that's mine. Your turn, darling.
All right. So I've got some of the same cards. I've got one card that's different that I have never pulled. Okay. Reunion with a forgotten love is the first one. This is yourself. This is a female. You are going to fall in love with yourself because you have lost yourself over the years to other people, because you have kowtowed, you have, like my sister just said yes when you meant no, and it has built resentment, and it is basically, you know, torn you down to the point you've torn yourself down, you know, and I'm not trying to be harsh because I have done this myself. Believe me, my sister can confirm this, you know, this essentially. Once you turn around and stop blaming other people and realize it's because you said no or you said yes when you meant no, you will understand the gravity of the situation and actually start saying, you know what, I don't want to. And you don't have to explain yourself. So get to know yourself again. Get reacquainted with what you used to love to do, what made you happy. And don't worry about interfering with somebody else's schedule because, you know what, it's your fucking life. Anyway, second card, unexpected useful gift. This is a car. Somebody is going to be getting a car that they have greatly needed because you're taking the bus all the time and you are working your ass off and you are trying to make your life better. And I'm so sorry because life has dealt you a ton of shit. But it's about to get better. Third card, encounter with a stranger brings unhappiness. This is somebody who's going on vacation. Major tip for anybody, you know, but especially this person, and this is a male, try not to look like a tourist. Mm-hmm. Don't wear a fanny pack. Don't carry a camera around your neck. Look like you know what you're doing. Whether you do or not, do not go up to strangers and ask for directions. If you need to ask for directions, go into a shop or something. You know, go into a restaurant, go into a gas station, go into a shop. Do not ask somebody on the street, hey, I'm looking for this place. because it's going to wind up being someplace that everybody who is a local knows where it is, and you are going to seem like a tourist, so you are going to become a target. Don't do that to yourself. Otherwise, you know, you can avoid that situation, that card, the encounter with a stranger brings unhappiness. You can avoid that. Do not look like a tourist. Fourth card, because I've pulled five. Marriage of an ex-love will annoy and aggravate. Now, this is a little bit different because this is actually, this is the marriage of a parent. This is the marriage of a mother. Yes. An ex-boyfriend who they dated many, many years ago, and I'm sorry, your father had passed away. But this is somebody that they dated many, many years ago, and they've kind of rekindled, but you can see this douchebag for what he is.
Oh, my goodness.
There is nothing, yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. I am so sorry your mother has to go through this, because this is a lesson she needs to learn. So it will annoy you, it will aggravate you, but it's something that needs to take place, and I'm really sorry about that. I highly suggest much meditation and many hours of yoga. Now, fifth card, dull life, loss, and unhappiness. This can actually be avoided as well. Okay, I understand your life is not that exciting. Your life seems dull. You want excitement. You want adventure. It will come to you. Do not seek it. Don't go jumping out of planes. Don't go bungee jumping. Don't go thrill seeking in the city by yourself. Don't go getting drunk out with the girls on a Friday night. I understand. It's very frustrating for you. You want something to start. You're craving something. But if you go and you seek it and you don't let it come to you, is going to be devastating. And I say those words with much gravity, as much as I possibly can, because I this is somebody else who's going to be listening in later on the show. You know, like to the archives, do not seek it. Let it come to you. I know you want to. I know you want to. And it's like I can hear them as I'm saying these words, like, but I just really want to do. No. I'm not saying don't go on a trip or anything like that, but don't go thrill seeking, because you are going to go overboard and it is going to cost you.
Ooh.
So just don't do it.
Oh.
Okay, and that is my reading, and I do believe we have Mr. Taliesin on the phone.
Hallelujah!
All right, hold on a second. Let me bring him on.
There she goes, saying, hold on. I love that.
I know. I do.
Oh,
hello.
There he is. Taliesin, I missed you.
I missed you guys, too. How's it going?
Oh,
it's going.
It's going all kinds of ways, honey. It's going all kinds of ways. Impart some wisdom upon me, please. I don't know what's going on in the world.
Same shit, different day, what?
Yeah, could be.
I know. How are
could
you?
Be.
I am doing groovy. I'm knee-deep in doing pre-production on my next film.
Awesome.
Looking at actors, looking for a new cinematographer. I'm going to be doing auditions here probably in a couple of weeks to start pulling my cast together, getting locations and all that fun stuff.
Awesome.
Oh, I so wish I lived closer. Oh, my God, I would love to be in one of your movies.
Well, this next movie is going to be really gay, but anyway.
That's fine. I can do that. I got no problem with that.
I can do that. Hello, I'm bisexual. I can definitely
there
do that.
There you go.
Hello. Thank you.
Yes, I've actually got a bisexual character in this next film. So,
yeah.
Yay!
Represent. I can help the bi people represent.
Thank you. Because we're not, ever. No, I mean, I have to be honest with you. Anytime I've seen bisexual, especially women, bisexual women I've seen portrayed as just, you know, we're flaky. We can't make up our mind. No, we are equal opportunity lover. We can take from column B. We can take from column A. Sex like a Chinese restaurant. What can I say?
Yeah, and just because you're taking from column B doesn't mean you're constantly looking for a column A at the same time. No.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I think bisexual people really get the shaft, not literally, but figuratively, from
sometimes
from all kinds of sections of society, because, you know, they're too gay for the straight people, and they're not gay enough for a lot of the gay community, so they wind up getting crap from both sides.
Yes, that is true. Yeah. Well, what freaked me out was many years ago they were interviewing Doc. Do you remember Dr. Ruth by any chance?
Dr. Ruth?
Oh,
God.
Yes.
Dr.
Ruth Westheimer was being interviewed on TV, and she said that bisexuality did not exist. And I turned to my spouse at the time, and I said, guess what? I am not sitting here. You're talking to yourself. I'm not even here. So I always found that upsetting and frustrating, and it really hasn't changed all that much out there in the world.
No, and especially with, you know, the fact that more and more people are really realizing that sexuality can be more and more fluid. In many ways, I mean, that's one of the things that was nice about the Kinsey scale was, you know, instead of looking at people as either 100% heterosexual or 100% homosexual, it's the idea of sexuality being a spectrum, and that most people fall somewhere between a 0, which is completely het, or a 6, which is completely gay. Most people fall on the numbers in between, and, you know, and it doesn't make people flaky. It doesn't make them indecisive. It does, you know, it's just the idea that human sexuality cannot be put in clearly defined columns or comfortable little boxes. And, you know, it's just a little bit more complex than that. As a matter of fact, I think we need to take the Kinsey scale and move it from like a 6-number scale, like to a 12-number scale, just to allow a little bit more subtlety in there.
I think so. I agree with that. Totally agree with that.
And talking about all this gay stuff is a perfect transition into talking about Arizona.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
Yeah. Arizona, where the Republican Party had to depend on Jan Brewer to pull their asses out of the fire.
Yes, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I'm like, really? Jan Brewer is going to stand up and say, maybe this isn't a good idea to let shop owners make a decision like that about who they'll serve. You have to wonder, because it makes you time trip back to, you know, the pre-civil rights march or during the civil rights marches where black people couldn't attend the same schools or sit at the same counters or be anywhere they wanted on a bus. I'm like, really? We're going to do that to gay people? In Arizona? Perfect. Go ahead. Try it.
Yeah, and it's like we tried Jim Crow and it didn't fucking work. And the hell it is that, I mean, some of the people who were actually voted for this bill, some of the Republicans who voted in favor of this bill, then turned around and asked the governor to veto it once they realized, oh, wow, people really are paying attention to what we do here. I mean, I don't know what they thought, if they thought they were going to be able just to kind of slip this through without anybody noticing or something like that. But, you know, I'll tell you, though, where a lot of this comes from, though, is that I can actually understand why they would believe that they'd be able to put this kind of thing through, especially couching things in the terms that they did. A so-called religious liberty banner, I could see why they actually thought they could slip this through, because they've been slipping stuff through under the guise of of religious liberty for some time, but they were doing it in different ways. They did it in terms of birth control pills. There's a bunch of states in this country that pass laws that basically say that if you work in a pharmacy and your religious beliefs say that, you know, people shouldn't have birth control pills, that you can refuse to fill that prescription for people. They call them shield clauses or conscience clauses. And they were putting this, and it was a really widely worded thing where, like, if you were filling a prescription for somebody who you knew to be unmarried and you didn't think that unmarried people should be having sex, you could refuse to fill a woman's birth control prescription. And I can't remember how many states passed laws like that. And people at the time were protesting these things and saying that these are horrible things, but the mainstream media and the general pop culture consciousness didn't really pick it up. And they were able to pass these laws through without a tremendous amount of blowback on them from doing that. And they did that so much that obviously they thought that they could put this exact same type of thing through under a different subject and have it just kind of slide through without anybody really noticing or commenting on it. The thing that happened, though, was the fact that the conscience clauses, when it came to things like medications and all that, those were very narrowly defined things. They were very narrowly defined and very specific things. And the thing is that with the bills that they've crafted, the stay away gay bills, basically, that they were doing here, they worded these things so incredibly broadly, and it was so all-encompassing that it really made people pay attention in a way that they hadn't paid attention before. But, you know, these things that we talk about that, you know, that you embolden these types of religious extremists when they get to do these little things and nobody notices, and then they're going to be going for more and more. Some people try to write that off as being paranoid, but right here, here's a prime example where they decided they're going to mess with a woman's ability to get birth control pills, and they succeeded with that, and then so then they decided to go even farther. And really what's going on here is it's an acknowledgement by the religious right that as far as their values and their agenda being foisted upon the public via legislation, that they've really hit a saturation point with that. They've pretty much got everything that they're going to get. I mean, for example, a lot of states that have abstinence-only sex education, or as I like to call it, the Teenage Pregnancy Encouragement Act. You know, that directly is a direct thing out of the religious rights value set, the idea that if you tell kids just say no to sex, that somehow they're going to listen to you, or that if you actually teach them about sexuality and contraception, that you're somehow giving them permission to have sex, something like that. And, you know, that is a prime example of a religious right thing that gets imposed on the whole of a culture through this legislation. And the thing is that they've been campaigning to try to get the, you know, try to get their way on these laws through various state legislatures and to some degree on national legislatures for years. But now they've started to run into things that they can't really get through state legislatures, because the things that legalize this this activity that they don't like are things that come from the federal level. And for example, the idea of banning birth control. Most of your religious right people would love to ban birth control. Most of your anti-abortionists, their actual goal isn't so much just the abolition of abortion, but they're also going after birth control. That's why I call them the forced birth movements, because that's really what they're into. They want to make sure that anybody, especially any woman who has sex, has to have that sort of Damocles hanging over their head of possible conception and forcing them to have a child, that they want to make sure that that is always a possibility when women engage in sexual activity as a way of curtailing the sexual revolution. The thing that they, you know, the real court case that really upsets the religious right people so much isn't Roe versus Wade. It is Griswold versus Connecticut, which is what legalized contraception across the entire 50 states. And they knew, though, that they can't go to state courts to try to curtail contraception because it was a national, it was a Supreme Court case that legalized it. So in order to attack contraception, they would have had to have gone through the national government, the Congress, and probably would have had to have tried to put together some kind of constitutional amendments in order to get their way, and they knew they just weren't going to get their way when it came to that. So they tried to find ways to make it so that the individuals in the religious extremists, various religious extremist movements in this country, your average everyday run-of-the-mill fundy, to try to find ways that these people could impose the right-wing extremist values on the rest of the country outside of the law, without having to pass a law actually banning contraception, just to make it more difficult to get a hold of. And what they really wanted is they wanted to shield their American Taliban foot soldiers, as I like to call them, the jihadists. They wanted to shield
yep.
these people from any sort of legal repercussion of trying to wage a social pop culture war against contraception. And so they would come up with these conscience clauses, these ways of shielding people so that if someone tried to impose their religious morals on someone on a person-to-person basis, that they would be covered, that they wouldn't, that their employers wouldn't be allowed to fire them, and that people wouldn't be allowed to sue them, and yada, yada, yada. Same, too, with gay civil rights, because with all of the states legalizing same-sex marriage, they know that the real danger towards shattering the heteronormative privilege that has been a part of the country's culture for so long, they know the real danger of that is from a federal level. They know that, you know, like, for example, gay civil rights being included in more and more civil rights laws. One of the things that the religious extremists in the Republican Party didn't like about reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act is that it covered lesbian and bisexual women as well as straight women. And that's really what mm-hmm. they didn't like. And that's really what was bothering them about that, and that's what caused them to fight so hard to try to stop the Violence Against Women Act from being reauthorized yet again. It was the whole idea about expanding these rights on a federal level to gay women and bisexual women. And so they've known all along that they're not going to get fresh bigotry laws passed on the national level. There's been a plank of the Republican Party ever since the gay marriage debate started back in the 1990s, back when Massachusetts became the first state to have their state courts legalize gay marriage. The Republican Party has had a plank in their platform calling for a constitutional amendment, an amendment to the U.S. Constitution banning gay marriage, to basically write bigotry into the U.S. Constitution. But that's been an uphill battle. They've never even had anything like that even get out of committee, let alone actually get voted on by one of the houses of Congress. So, again, like with the contraception, they've decided to see if they can shield their individual foot soldiers in the American Taliban from any sort of legal repercussion from them trying to maintain the sexual apartheid that has been a part of the U.S. culture pretty much all along, where, you know, gay people stayed in the closet and yada, 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 since they knew they weren't going to get any new laws passed. And, you know, there's been this big rash of laws proposed in state legislatures all across the country, and they've all happened very quickly. I'm sure at some point we're going to trace all of these laws back to like a single right-wing lobbying group like ALEC or something like that, like the Stand Your Ground laws were all pushed at some point a few years ago and got passed by a bunch of states. I'm sure we're going to trace the anti-gay laws, the gay stay away laws, back to a single group like that. But they've been trying to put them all across the country, again, to provide some sort of legal shield for their foot soldiers in the American Taliban to try to impose the to try to maintain the state of sexual orientation apartheid going on a social and pop culture level and try to shield them from any ramifications from it. So in many ways, the fact that so many of these laws have been proposed across the country in state legislatures is in many ways a white flag from the religious right, saying that they know they're not going to get any new laws passed. And as a matter of fact, states are already starting to repeal their gay marriage bans one by one. It happened with Maine in the last election. Maine had actually banned gay marriage through a constitutional amendment, and then they went back and changed it back. So,
wow.
Yeah, so they realized that they're not going to get any new laws passed through legislatures to actually impose these things legislatively, so they're just trying to provide some cover for their individual people to try to maintain the bigotry without facing repercussions. So while in a way it's horrifying to see these laws being proposed and actually being considered by state legislatures, in many ways it's a symbolic surrender on their part, knowing that their days of getting these laws actually actively discriminating through the state are pretty much done. So that's one way to look at this. Now, the fact that it actually got through the legislature in Arizona is what surprised a lot of people because, you know, Kansas proposed a law like this. It got killed in committee. Florida proposed a law like this. It got killed in committee. Ohio had a law right in my own state here that proposed a law like this. It got killed in committee because, you know, of course, this just brings out the continuing Republican Civil War, which I'll get to in a minute. The fact that it actually passed through the Arizona state legislature is what surprised some people. And then you started to see the battle lines in the Republican Civil War being drawn because, well, did you want to say something real quick before I launch off on another tangent? Because I heard you wanting to kind of say something there for a moment.
Oh, no, I was laughing. I'm sorry. I'm enthralled.
Okay. No problem.
I know. I'm just like entranced. Keep going.
Yeah.
The battle lines for the Republican Civil War can be drawn right down the middle between the social conservatives and the fiscal conservatives. And like I've mentioned before on the show, for years the fiscal conservatives were very content to have the social conservatives in their party because the social conservatives would come out en masse and vote for whoever the Republican leadership told them to vote for. And they were more than happy to have their votes. And then once they get elected and go to Washington, they would go back and deal with all the fiscal conservative stuff, such as, you know, cutting taxes, cutting government, building up the Defense Department. I mean, they've been doing this stuff since they brought the social conservatives in with Ronald Reagan's first term. They would run and talk about all this social conservative stuff. And then once they get into office, they'd ignore all the social conservative stuff and focus on the money stuff. And what's happened is that after about 30 years of this, the social conservatives are getting a little steamed. They're starting to feel like they're Charlie Brown and the fiscal conservatives are Lucy holding the football for them. And right when they think they're actually going to get their way when it comes to some sort of social conservative activism stuff, the football gets yanked away and they start talking about tax cuts again. And the social conservatives are tired of it. They felt like they've been good foot soldiers all through this, that they've been loyal Republicans. They've been voting however their masters have been telling them to vote, and they really should be getting some payback for this. They should really be getting some actual results from supporting the Republican Party for all these years. And so the Civil War is being fought between the social conservatives, which include the racists, like the Tea Party people, and again, the fiscal people who are worried about increasing corporate welfare, slashing the social safety net, cutting taxes, and that sort of thing. And the reason why so many of these laws were killed in committee is that the fiscal conservatives are not stupid. They're not stupid the way that the Palin wing of the party is just fucking morons. They know that if they were to pass these kinds of laws in their states, that, I mean, most of corporate America already has things on the books basically declaring that their corporations have a non-discrimination policy when it comes to the LGBTQ community. They have corporate policies because they realize that it's smart business, because the money of gay people and the money of gay people's allies is just as green as the money of the inbred motherfuckers who vote for the social conservatives. And so they, you know, and being smart business owners, they realize that, you know, they can advertise on, you know, the Logo Network. And if somebody decides to go and buy their product because they saw an ad on Logo, that money is just as green as somebody who decided to buy their product because they saw it advertised on Fox News. So the fiscal conservatives really are not on board with the whole we hate the gays thing because it's bad for business. And a lot of the fiscal conservatives in these Republican state legislatures have realized that if they were to pass this kind of bill, they would be facing a nationwide boycott of their state, that businesses would not hold conventions there, new businesses would not want to locate any new corporate offices there, because corporations that, you know, have very, very smart, capable people working for them who happen to be gay, well, you know, like Apple Computers is not going to ask, you know, one of their top flight managers to go and manage an office in a state where they could be actively discriminated against in their everyday life. So that would severely curtail the corporation's ability to move people around and to make money any way that they see fit. So the fiscal conservatives in state after state have been killing these bills. In the state of Georgia, on the same day that Jan Brewer announced her veto of the Arizona bill, in Georgia, the fiscal conservatives stepped in and took their so-called Religious Freedom Protection Act and gutted it. They gutted it to the point where the only thing left was adding In God We Trust to the state seal. Everything else was gone because what they feared started to come to fruition in Florida. You know, it is, okay, in Florida. That is where, you know, once they started to make it look like this bill might actually pass in Florida, all of, you know, there was announcement of a nationwide boycott of the state. All these businesses started to completely and totally oppose any new business being done in the state. You know, the NFL was talking about moving the Super Bowl because the Super Bowl is slated to be played in Phoenix in 2015. They were talking about moving the Super Bowl out of the state, and that right there is hundreds of millions of dollars that the state would have lost out on, and the businesses in that state were going to lose out on big money. Just, you know, the amount of money that's made when a single corporation or group has their conventions in a state is worth millions of dollars. So the fiscal people, you know, everything that they've been predicting were going to happen started happening with Arizona even before the bill could have been signed. And so it was basically the fiscal conservatives who came in and put the hammer down and said, look, you know, told the governor, look, if you sign this bill, you are screwing over every single business and corporation that does business within the borders of the state of Arizona. And that is the biggest reason why she vetoed the bill. It's not that Jan Brewer is, you know, tolerant of anybody or accepting of anybody different from her. She signed the papers please law that basically treats anybody with brown skin as a potentially legal alien in her state. But the thing is that when the corporate people came in and said, you are going to cost, you know, our clients millions upon millions of dollars if you sign this bill, that's when she vetoed it. And now the social conservatives are hopping mad because they wanted this bill. They wanted it signed. They wanted legal protections for their people to discriminate as much as they wanted to without facing any sort of legal ramifications. And the fiscal conservatives stepped in and put the kibosh on it. And so now you're seeing the behind the scenes, the Republican Civil War is turning into a hot war. They're not just complaining against each other anymore. They are completely pissed. And, you're going to see some very real, very real shit going down on that.
Mm-hmm.
You really are. So it's heating everything up. And tell you the truth, I mean, the biggest thing, too, is that now that all these fiscal conservatives are flexing their muscle and putting the kibosh on this type of stuff, now you're starting to see the social conservatives saying things like, you know, they're certainly not going to go and vote for a Democrat in the midterms, but some of them are actually talking about staying home and not voting for anybody to try to teach these Republicans a lesson about good old American values. And that changes the playing field entirely in ways that most people in the Republican Party don't want to even think about.
Wow. When are they just going to go away? I mean, because they seem to be self-imploding as it is. But it's like, I mean, every single time I hear something that a Republican has said, you know, and I'm not saying all Republicans are like this. I understand, you know, there are some middle-of-the-road people. I don't want to be downing any one particular group, but I swear to God, it's like, just when I think they can't get any dumber, they go and prove me wrong. And it's like, I'm going to just stop thinking that. I'm going to stop putting that out into the universe because they prove me wrong. When can we look forward to them self-imploding and possibly a new party coming about?
Well, I'll tell you what. The thing that's really going to have to happen here, for them to implode and either reform themselves from the inside or shatter apart and form into some new parties is that basically the Civil War is going to have to cause them to split off from each other. Hold on for one second here. Hold on real quick. Take a look at something here. So hold on for one second. I'll be right back with you. Talk amongst yourselves for a moment. Hold on.
Okay.
Do that.
Okay. He told us to hold on. See, it's not just me.
No,
everybody's doing it tonight.
I think so. It's pretty funny, actually. Oh, my God.
Can I just take a second to say something that I was going to say, but I didn't want to gross everybody out? As some of you may know, I got into a car accident a couple weeks ago. My husband thought he was going the wrong way, and we wound up almost head-on collision, but it was a sideswipe, and thankfully I was the only one who got injured. But this cast is about getting on my fucking nerves because it stinks. It is so sour. I don't know if this is my first cast. I've made it 40 years, knock on wood, without breaking anything. And I swear to Buddha, this cast, it's like every time I go to scratch my nose, every time this thing comes near my face, it's sour. If anybody has any suggestions on how to get rid of this stank, please send them to my inbox because I am so tired of this.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize you were having such a rough time with that.
Oh, my God. And it's just popped up the last couple of days. Because, yeah, I mean, I'm not a sweaty person, but all humans sweat. And, you know, obviously I have to put a garbage bag over it every time I go in the shower, which is really annoying because it makes it hard to wash. So I'm washing one-handed. And
uh-huh.
This thing is just, the past couple of days, I guess my palms been getting sweaty, and it is just rank.
Oh,
rank is
okay.
All get out.
You're hilarious. Hello.
I am back. My wife just came home. I had to say hi and then let her know something was going on here real quick. But anyway.
Tell her we say hey.
Okay, I will. So we were talking about what it's going to take for the thing is, the Republican Party as it is right now cannot sustain itself as a national party. Because the thing is that, you know, I'll tell you, if they did not have, really, the Republican Party has become a very much a white regional southern party in a lot of ways. Most of, you know, even in the other parts of the country where they hold power, it's really, really tenuous. And demographics are working against them with a fury right now. The fact of the matter is that the principal demographics of the Republican Party are old, angry white guys. That is no longer a sustainable model. I mean, just to show you how much the demographics of the voting public is changing, in the 1988 election, that was Michael Dukakis versus George Bush Sr. George Bush Sr. got 60% of the white vote, and he walked away with 400 electoral votes. In the 2012 campaign, Mitt Romney got 60% of the white vote, and he could just barely crack 200. So the Southern strategy that sustained the Republican Party since the early 1970s, which has been by and large a white and overly male voting bloc, that's coming to a close. Chuck Grassley from the Republican Party himself said that we're not churning out old, angry white guys the way we used to as a culture. And that's true. So they really do not have a sustainable model. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, of course, we've all talked about the poll that happened where they pulled Hillary Clinton against just about anybody the Republicans could run in Texas, and she beat all of them. Thing is, another poll was just recently released that showed that Hillary Clinton could actually turn Louisiana into a Democratic state in 2016.
What?
She's not there
for real?
She's polling close enough to all the people who are possible in the Republican field. There are still a few that are polling better than her in Louisiana, but she's within 2 or 3 points. And in politics, 2 or 3 points is a statistical dead heat. And the idea that Louisiana could be in fucking play in 2016 shows you just how screwed the Republicans are. I mean, really, the only reason that Mitt Romney only lost by like 7 million votes last time is because of the racism in the country. And when they talk about running a white woman against any of these Republican guys, she is being competitive in places that just wouldn't vote for a black guy. So really, in many ways, the latent racism in the country has kind of cushioned the Republican Party and has really allowed their they're being screwed politically to not be as obvious as it has been. The fact of the matter is that the ascending voting blocks, the people who are going to be the voters of tomorrow, are principally not only the African-American voting bloc, but also the Asian-American voting bloc, the Latino voting bloc, and single women. Because women are getting married less and less than any other generation. Many are just being very content to stay single or to cohabitate with someone. And really, the only female demographic that the Republicans have had any success with have been married suburban women. But single women, they have just completely screwed themselves over with. And the single women of today are going to be the married women of tomorrow. And when people get set into these voting patterns, they really tend to stay in them. In the 1980s, you saw people get locked into being these so-called Reagan Democrats, and they voted for Republicans for years, election after election after that, even when Reagan wasn't involved anymore. So, I mean, you know, just to show you what kind of a mess that the entire conservative movement is in, just how completely not interested these guys are in fixing the mess that they're in, the CPAC conference is going on right now. That's the big conservative political action conference. And they decided that they're going to have a seminar on minority outreach. And they booked a room that could hold like a few thousand people. And 20 showed up. It was empty room. And that's not just talking about how few minorities there are hanging around with Republicans, because there are almost no minorities at CPAC, but that just goes to show you that not only are minority voters not interested in Republicans, but a lot of your hardcore conservatives aren't interested in reaching out to them either. They're really, really living in a fantasy land. So, so the Republican Party, as it is right now, cannot sustain itself. You're basically getting to the point where you're having, the Latino voters are so ascendant, of what's going on right now. They're so ascendant that the fact that Republicans have lost them for a generation. Is just show, you know, that's really going to spell certain doom for them. And the fact is that, you know, some people say it could be 2016, but definitely by 2020, if you can't get the Latino vote, you're not going to win Texas. And that's going to screw the Republican Party right there. So,
but let me ask you a question, because they've pulled another Bush out of the pot who happens to be part Latino. I mean, does he really even have a chance? Have we had it with the Bushes yet? Or is this their, like, ace in the hole?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, in many ways, the person that you really need to feel sorry for with Jeb is you got to feel sorry for Jeb, because with the whole thing with his brother...
Not really.
Kind of destroyed the Bush name. It's just you got to feel bad for him, because you know he was always considered the smarter one. You know, he was always considered the sharper crayon in the box. And when you think about the way he governed Florida, you realize that he really was probably the most capable out of all the Bush boys at governing amongst them. But I mean, even when somebody asked Barbara Bush about her son Jeb running, Barbara said, "I think we've had enough Bushes in the White House." Mom saying this.
Yeah.
So the conservatives, the Republicans, like I said, they're living in this fantasy world. They would love to think, oh, well, Jeb was really popular in Florida, so we can turn that popularity into something nationwide. But the thing is that, you have an entire generation of people who grew up under W. And they're definitely not going to vote for another Bush again. The fact that Jeb doesn't, the one thing George W. had going for him with the social conservatives is that W. was a recovered alcoholic. And so he was a genuine born-again Christian. He is somebody who really walked the walk and talked the talk as far as being a born-again evangelical because, you know, he's a 12-stepper. And Jeb never got into that kind of trouble. So the social conservatives never trusted the Bush family. A lot of them think that they kind of got screwed over by Junior anyway, because he was so busy worried about his wars overseas that he couldn't quite push their extremist agenda at home. So there's a real question as to whether the social conservatives would back him up either. I mean, really, just the Bush. I mean, somebody asked Jeb during the last election why he didn't run. And he got this look on his face when the reporter asked him that. Does this look like, did you just fucking ask me that? Are you And he came out and said, well, I think that the family brand name isn't exactly all of that sellable right now. I mean, this is it kind of shows you that he is the smarter one. But it's just ridiculous the way that these guys are locked into their little fantasy world. So, I mean, oh my goodness,
it's a lot to recover from in that family. So I really don't see. I mean, you know, there were a couple of political seasons, where I thought, you know, they're just going to run them consecutively and get Jeb in there. And I think Jeb feels like, as many people probably do, they're just so damaged right now, you know, the Oliver Stone movie, notwithstanding, if anybody's ever seen the movie W with Josh Brolin doing the George W. And it's weird because, you know, it's interesting. You have this view of a political person as being all one thing. And as we know, no one is all one anything. And you kind of almost feel sorry for GW when you see, if any of it's really accurate, the kind of favoritism and strange family relationship that he had, kind of like when I was watching, although to a much goofier note, when we were watching Mitt, and it was like, wow, unfortunately, he actually was the smartest person in the room a lot of the time, but that's easy when you surround yourself with fucking morons, but that's just my opinion.
And you want to talk about what kind of bad straits the Republican Party is right now. I was looking at reading an article about the sorry state of fundraising with the Republican Party right now, and the fact that they're having so much trouble fundraising for potential candidates because so many of them are just so damaged politically that, and especially when you take a look at the people who are thinking about running for the Republican nomination and the last campaign we are calling the crew running for the Republicans as the Republican clown car. Well, the people who are talking about running right now make those guys look like statesmen. I mean, you know, we're talking Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Bobby Jindal, just really just incredible pieces of mystery meat. Paul Ryan's talking about running. Good old the frothy fellow himself, Rick Santorum, is talking about running again. And the thing is that in the article, one of the guys who was the money people actually confided, off the record, on background, he said that they miss Mitt Romney, really shows you what kind of straits they're in. As a matter of fact, there was another recent poll done recently that looked at the favorables versus the unfavorables of these various potential Republican candidates. And they were asking people like, people like Ted Cruz, yada, 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 do you have a favorable or an unfavorable opinion of this person? And a lot of them were coming back with extreme net unfavorables in the national election. And even a lot of them were coming back with bad unfavorables even within the Republican Party. The person who polled best out of everybody they asked him about was Mitt Romney, the guy who just had his ass handed to him in the last election. So, I mean, you're really seeing... You're seeing a bad situation with the Republicans where they're really not – I mean, really, Mitt Romney got the nomination because a bunch of the people who could have been better positioned to run decided that they weren't going to try to run against Barack Obama because they could see that it was going to be a losing proposition. So they let Mitt run and figured he'd be the sacrificial sheep. And it wasn't so much that they thought Obama was such a strong candidate, but they could see – that the Republican Party, especially as beholden to the Tejadas as they've been, are such a weak party right now. And it's only getting worse, which is the hilarious thing. So really, getting back to the original question about what is it going to take to make these guys implode going to be the fact that once their governing coalition either shatters apart, like either it would probably be the social conservatives who take their ball and go home and decide to go join another party. Although the fiscal conservatives, there's a certain amount of flight from the fiscal conservatives from the Republican Party to the Libertarian Party, because in many ways the Libertarian Party is just as pro-corporate and just as pro-business as the Republicans. They just don't have the crazy-ass racists in there that the Republicans have. The Republicans are losing some of their fiscal people to the Libertarians, although I think it's far more likely for the social conservatives to decide, okay, you guys don't want to play the way we do. We're going to take our ball and go form another party. So either that coalition between the fiscal and the social conservatives needs to fracture, or they just need to be reduced to electoral irrelevance, where basically they can't win anything anymore, and that's going to cause a shakeup, some sort of big purge in the Republican Party where one side is going to actively purge the other out of there to see if they can rebuild any sort of governing coalition. And so, that's really what it's going to take. And the best thing we can do is to, you know, make sure that, you know, they get kicked out of power. You know, give the House back to the Democrats, work on your state level for the state legislatures, and start flipping those over, and basically make sure that the Republican Party cannot be competitive on a national level, and that's what's going to force them to change and to evolve.
Yeah.
So.
Very valid point. Because, yeah, it cannot continue the way it's going. You know, I mean, we're not stupid. You know, I'm not saying that not all of us are smart, but, you know, for the most part, Americans are not stupid, and I think we're finally fucking tired of this shit. I mean, we can all talk to each other on a regular basis at this point, and they can't stop that, you know, because we've, you know, basically every time they try to put control over the internet, we're like, no, fuck you. You're not doing that to us. We can talk to each other now. You're not going to stop that.
Well,
you
actually,
know,
it's
what,
not
you're
about,
not China.
Yeah, but it's not about that so much as controlling content. And I think that's where the new internet battle is going to be, by controlling content. When you're, you know, it's one thing to get the news. It's another thing to get news that's only geared for you. You know, I was upgrading my Google recently, and it said, how would you like news that we know you'll like it because we're watching what you've already liked? You know what I mean? It's a little, it's very Big Brother creepy-ish and freaking me out, and I think that's an extreme form of control. It just hasn't hit anybody like that yet. But I think it is.
Yeah, so really, when you think about it, though, one of the biggest, I mean, you know, for all of the vaunted ways that the internet was going to revolutionize the way that the economy was done, what's been the single biggest change in the way people interact in the past decade? It's been the rise of social media. And the thing is that social media has become, in and of itself, such a powerful, such a profitable business model that I think we're going to achieve some balance there too, because, you know, social media companies want the free flow of information, because the more people share with each other, the better that the social media companies do. I mean, Facebook is ginormous now, and Facebook is one of the principal people fighting against efforts to restrict the flow of information on the internet, because that's how they make all their money. You know, and same with Google Plus and Twitter and all of that stuff. So in many ways, the fact that these things have been able to become so profitable is one of the things that can actually help help us in trying to keep the free flow of information going. And really, when it comes down to it, though, citizen journalism through blogs and through all that, it's kind of a toothpaste that you can't really squeeze back into the tube. It's so widespread and it's so big. And again, so many people are making money off of it that attempts to change that, or change the limits that, attempts to roll that back are going to be met with a lot of resistance, not just from everyday people, but from people with money. So that's, you know, that's another thing that we've got going for us. And really, the one of the biggest things that have changed the way campaigns have done, and the way campaigns conduct themselves, is YouTube, of all things, because we live in the era of YouTube. See, back in the pre-internet days, what a lot of people who have kind of grown up with this stuff don't realize is that it would happen all the time where you'd have a politician going out and giving their stump speeches, and they would be saying this and that and the other thing in their son speeches, and, you know, and then when they'd actually get the nomination and go and do a presidential debate, and they'd be asked about the same subject, they could come out and give a completely different answer. And so that's how it used to be, that, you know, like the Republicans could run to the right and the Democrats could run to the left in their primaries, but then when they'd get the nomination and they'd have to face the general election, they'd try to edge themselves back to the middle. And that used to happen all the time because, you know, really the major newspapers would be covering things. The big network news would be covering things, and they wouldn't be worried about what someone said 6 months ago. They'd be worried about what they said last night because they consider that to be more newsworthy. But in the era of YouTube, you know, you go out and do your stump speech, somebody's videotaping you. Even if it's just on a camera phone, somebody's videotaping you. And if you come out on a presidential debate and you try to, you know, and you said A on the campaign trail and you say B in the debate, within 5 minutes, there's going to be somebody posting on YouTube a split screen of you on one side saying one thing and you on the other side saying something completely different, and it's going to completely blow up in your face. And that is actually something that the Republicans still have not learned. They have still not realized that in the era of YouTube, you need to come up with a message that's going to fly with the general election populace, and you have to do it in the primaries, because there's, you can't run away from your statements anymore. There's far too much accountability just from everyday people keeping track of your shit. And so that's the thing, you know. It's like where Mitt Romney would be in the Republican primary debates, and he'd be talking about all this, like, oh yeah, we're going to ban this, we're going to ban abortion, yada yada yada, and he'd try to soften it up once he hit the general national debates, and people would immediately just flash it up saying, that's not what you said back here, Mitt. That's why they started calling him Flip Romney. To say nothing of what he used to say when he was running for governor of a very liberal state like Massachusetts. And also, I want to talk about the way that YouTube has revolutionized campaigns. All I have to do is say 47%.
Oh!
Yeah.
I remember that like it was yesterday, and I remember the first time, because I was watching Rachel Maddow. That's where I learned about that whole thing. And I'm like, who's the brave soul that actually taped that? And I remember it being, like, the biggest deal. And I think it lost in the election.
Very much so. At that point, everything that people suspected about Mitt Romney and the Republican Party was laid bare right there in that one video clip. Where
there was no doubt
basically
about that.
Writing up off almost half the American populace as unreachable, and of course, if you don't agree with him, then you're lazy, and you're shiftless, and you know, and you're just a freeloading bum, and all that stuff. And that's the thing too. It's like, you know, and you know, when your opponent can try to define you all they want, but when you come out and you basically affirm every bad thing that your opponent has said about you, and it comes from your own mouth, stick a fork in your ass, you're done. And you know, of course, did you see who it was who ultimately had videotaped that?
No, I don't remember that. Who was that?
It was one of the people. It was one of the kitchen staff who happened to be a Latino who had been hired to serve tea and sandwiches to all these rich white people. And he heard this guy start talking, and he realized that this is a behind-the-closed-doors speech. This is not the stuff that he normally says out in public, and he just put it on his camera phone. So it was your friendly representative of the 99%, a Latino kitchen worker who basically torpedoed Mitt Romney's own campaign with his own words. So...
I like watching somebody implode on themselves. I'm sorry.
Yes.
He deserved it. He really did.
Especially since, he pulled the pin on the grenade and stuffed it down his own pants. I mean, it's like, oh my, and that right there, that goes, and I'll tell you too, you know, you're talking about like, you know, how people in this country can be stupid enough to vote against their own self-interest. The thing is it's not people in this country who do that. It's stupid white people who do that. I mean, we've seen this now. I mean, because, and what it is, I mean, that really there is the price that we pay as a country for ridiculous amounts of ingrained social racism. Because, I mean, you know, because a lot of this stuff, a lot of your buzzwords that you hear from the Republicans saying that, you know, why should government take hard, you know, take your hard-earned money and give it away to some lazy person on welfare? That's the words they're saying, but in the cultural mind of your white middle-class individual, the way it translates in their brain is government is going to take money from you and give it to some black person. Because when you say the words welfare queen, the image that immediately pops into people's minds is some black woman in a fur coat with a Cadillac. I mean, even though you never say the words black woman, fur coat, Cadillac, when Ronald Reagan started talking about welfare queens, white America knew exactly what he was talking about. And you know, and LBJ said it himself that, you know, if you take your average dirt poor white person and still convince him that he's better off than the most well-off black man, then you're going to get him to vote against their own self-interest for the rest of their life. And that's what's been happening, especially with the unresolved racism in the baby boomer generation. Because let's face it, people, a majority of baby boomers were not marching on Washington. They did not go to Woodstock. A majority of baby boomers stayed back in the suburbs where their parents had been raised and absorbed a lot of the same bullshit and prejudices that their parents had themselves. But you've had this whole generation of stupid white people who the Republicans say their dog whistles, and they get people to vote against their own self-interest because they're somehow afraid that those evil liberals are going to put, basically, that the country is going to wind up being where white people are treated as poorly as white people have treated black people for all these years. You know,
I think that's the big fear, isn't it? I think that's really the big fear. You know, when they the whole immigration thing and the whole, you know, and we've seen the Latino population grow so much, and we know that we're heading towards a space where we, you know, white, quote unquote, and I use quote unquote because I don't think any of us are really 100% white anymore. So people need to like let that shit go already, because that's, you know, a lie that you tell yourself. I think they're afraid that they're going to – I think it's white guilt that really makes them want to scare everybody else into thinking that, oh, these minorities that we – it's like what happens when you beat your slave and everybody gets together and the slaves revolt. And I think they might be entitled to that, don't you think? To feel that way? Not the white people. I'm talking about the slaves wanting revenge.
Right.
I don't blame them.
Right. See, the hell of it is that, I mean, you know, it's like this meme I saw on Facebook where it said homophobia, that deep-seated fear that men have that gay men are going to treat them as poorly as they've treated women all these years. And it's the same thing, too. It's like a lot of your Republican buzzwords, you know, talking about how, you know, well, if you work hard and play by the rules, and it's like basically, again, that dog whistle where it's like, yeah, if you go out and get a job and work instead of like all these shiftless, lazy black people. And now it is that most of the people on welfare in this country are white because, hello, we're the majority. We're going to have the majority of the welfare. But and yet a couple of years ago was the first time since white people landed in this country where more non-white babies born to people than white babies. So times they are changing. But you've had people who, again, you know, even people who would never actively discriminate against somebody who, again, would even have plenty of friends who are black, they play on the fears, the idea that when things flip, then, you know, you're going to be treated as poorly by your new multicultural overlords as the black people and the Mexicans have been treated by white people all these years, and it gets people to vote out of fear. Well, the thing is that this is changing because, again, the electorate is changing. That number I gave you about the difference between what 60% of the white vote got you in 1988 versus what 60% of the white vote gets you in 2012 just there shows you how different the voting demographics are going to be. You take a look at the Latino population, and 500,000 young Latinos are turning 18 years old every single month. That's 6 million new Latinos a year who are of voting age. Right there shows you the incredible demographic shift that's going on. And when you take a look at the non-white voters, when you take a look at the Latino voters, at black voters, you take a look at Asian American voters, or you take a look at the non-white male voters, like the young women, and that sort of thing. These people do not fall for the Republican talking points. They don't fall for the same old bullshit lines, and these people do not vote against their own self-interest. And again, to, just to give a complete shoot-down of the Republican meme that, oh, what all people want is free stuff from the government, thereby implying that all of these people are voting for Democrats because all these people are poor and the Democrats are going to give people, poor people, more stuff. The fact that Asian Americans, who demographically are doing better economically than just about any other group in this country, the fact that Asian Americans went for Barack Obama over Mitt Romney by 70%. That right there shows you that it's not just a rich-poor thing. It is, you know, it is people who are smart about their voting, and they realize that these Republicans don't like them and are not going to speak for them and aren't going to fight for them. And again, these younger voters, these 18 to 29-year-old voters, have grown up in a society that is more multicultural than any other generation before. They've grown up with far more diversity than ever before. With a higher rate of interracial children than ever before. I mean, these people also are not falling for the old bullshit Republican dog whistles. The only thing that we need to overcome, because the lesson over and over again is that when Democratic voters turn out, we win. The thing that we have to fight against is the fact that we are great at mobilizing our various voting blocks every 4 years for presidential elections. But these people do not tend to come out and vote in midterm elections nearly as often. Midterm elections, the voter demographics tend to be older and whiter than they are during the general election. So that's one thing that we've got to fight against, is that we've got to keep up. We've got to make the Oscar elections just as big, just as important, and just as exciting to people as we make the presidential elections, because we need to get more black voters, Asian voters, Latino voters, and more young voters coming out to the polls in the in-between elections years if we're going to have a prayer of turning the tide and starting to win back not only the House, but the state legislatures. Now, a while ago, in this little extended rant that I do, and I'm sure people out there are wondering, doesn't he ever fucking take a breath? But anyway.
We like that you don't breathe. It's one of my favorite things.
It's a tantric breathing thing. I learned it from a lesbian. Breathe. Anyway.
There you go. There you go. Learn from a lesbian. That is a good thing. Go for it.
But no, see, that's, you know, how I was saying earlier about the Republican Civil War and the fact that you've got Republicans hopping mad over any, you've got these Tejadas and the Republican base. The Republican base is usually really good at turning out to vote for elections. They're very, very good at it. For one thing, most of them come from authoritarian religious systems where they listen to their leaders and do what their leaders tell them. But also, they tend to be older and whiter. The Republican base tends to be. And yet the Republican base has been getting really, really pissed off, one, at the fact that the fiscal conservatives keep selling out the social conservatives. Like, for example, when John Boehner allowed a clean debt ceiling bill to be proposed in the House, he knew that it was going to win. And all of the jihadist economic terrorist knuckle-draggers knew that if he produced clean bill, that it would pass, okay? And they knew this. So the thing is that that's why they're trying to pressure John Boehner to not put out a clean bill. They wanted a bill that was so loaded down with extra stuff that it would basically mean that the Democrats wouldn't vote for it, that sort of thing. That's what that's what an unclean bill does. And they were telling Boehner, don't you dare put out a clean bill on this, because they didn't want the debt ceiling. They wanted the debt ceiling to be tied to all kinds of demands. They wanted to have demands on, like, you know, yeah, you know, well, in order for us to not bankrupt the American economy and throw us into default and destroy the world economy, then you have to agree to repeal Obamacare and all that stuff. And they didn't want him to bring out a clean debt ceiling bill, and he wound up doing it because he knew that he was going to lose that fight. He knew that there was no way that he was going to win the fight against the debt ceiling because it's a stupid thing to pick a fight on anyway. You know, it's like, you know, let's threaten to do something that's going to annihilate the not just the U.S. economy, but it's going to fuck the world economy up beyond belief. Okay, so Boehner went ahead and put out a clean debt ceiling bill, and the right wing. I mean, I'll tell you, the Daily Kos has their Saturday nut pickapalooza where they actually go to a right wing website and see what the rank and file are saying about these various subjects. And they were furious with Boehner over introducing a clean debt ceiling bill that would pass. They were absolutely furious, and there were a bunch of them that were saying that they're not going to vote for this guy, and that if they can't primary this guy, then they're just going to stay home. And the thing is that for a lot of these races that are going to be happening this year, I mean, the entire House of Representatives goes up for re-election every couple of years. Every 2 years, the entire House is up for re-election. The thing is that the deadline to file a challenge to these guys in their primaries for a lot of states has already passed. So any Republican who hasn't picked up a Tea Party challenger yet probably isn't going to pick one up. Well, the thing is that you've got social conservatives saying that they can't vote for anybody that would sell them out on the We Hate Gays bill. You have the hardcore jihadists that are saying that they can't vote for someone who sold them out on the debt ceiling. And if it really gets to the point where the Republican Civil War gets hot enough that these people actually stay home, then that means that our efforts at getting out the vote are more important than ever. Because even if we could just get 20% of the people who voted in the last election to come out and vote in the next one, that could be enough. You could actually see us not only keep the Senate, but also flip the House and give Barack Obama his last 2 years in office with a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate.
That would be awesome.
That's major. And the thing is, that's the real price of the Republican Civil War, is the very real possibility that if these people get pissed off and they decide that they're just going to stay home, then that means that, you know, that even if we can't get, you know, we're not going to get 100% of the people who voted for the Democrats in the 2012 election to come out for 2014, but if we could just get a smaller fraction of them, if enough of these other people stay home or throw away their vote on some symbolic libertarian candidate, then we could have a real chance of stepping in and taking control of things. And that's the thing, is that once we can get a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and get control of the House, that is what's going to kill the Republican Party. Because a lot of people have a very low opinion of Congress right now. I mean, every time that a Republican says, well, Obama only has a 45% approval rating, I'm like, yeah, well, congressional Republicans only have a 19% approval rating, so fuck you. But the thing is that if we could give people a couple of years to actually get some of these liberal or progressive policies passed, and people don't realize that the Republican-controlled House has ensured that the Congress over the last 5 years has accomplished less as far as passing bills than any other Congress in the history of the country. They've just, since they can't get their stuff passed, they've just been content to stand in the way and not let anybody do things, because they know that if the Democrats get to do things that actually help things, improve the economy, improve people's lives, then that's going to basically drive a stake through the heart of the glittery fucking Twilight vampire that the lame-ass Republican Party has become. So that's why I'm to try to mobilize people, because the best way to prove something is by doing. It's like, don't just tell me what you're going to do, show me. Well, if we get the chance to actually show the American people what these liberal and progressive policies are going to do, then, I'm sorry, I just got a text. Anyway, but, you know, if we can actually show them what we can do, then if we can actually show them what people can do, then that is going to stick a fork in the ass of the Republican Party that much faster.
Yay! Stick a fork in it.
Speaking of sticking a fork in it, before we actually officially stick a fork in it, would you care to say something about the situation in the Ukraine and what the hell is going on there right now, real quick, before we go off the air?
Sure. That's the thing, too, is something, too, primarily. See, the thing about Ukraine is that Ukraine had a very pro-Russian government for a long time, and there's basically been a popular uprising where they kicked the pro-Russian guys out, and they wanted to install a more pro-Ukrainian government in there. And, of course, the Russians don't like that, and Putin doesn't like that, so they put a bunch of troops on the Crimean Peninsula to basically put them in position to come in and take over the entire country if they decide that's what they want to do. Kind of like what we did when we put all those troops into Kuwait before we invaded Iraq the first time. And that's basically what's going on here. Basically, it's like, you know, the old Soviet satellite states, a lot of them have pro-Russian governments that have been put in there because the Russian mob has put a lot of money in and bought elections. And now you're starting to see some popular uprisings against that. And Russia doesn't want to allow this sort of thing to happen and to proliferate, or else they're going to lose a lot of their old satellite states. And Putin is saber-rattling right now. Now, the thing is that there's not a whole hell of a lot that we in the U.S. can do about that, because nobody's going to go to war with Russia over Ukraine. And we don't really have much moral authority to tell them that they're wrong ever since Bush invaded Iraq. Although I did see a funny tweet recently where somebody said that, you know, if George W. Bush was president when the Russians invaded Ukraine, he probably would have acted by now and invaded New Zealand. But, it's like, we don't really have much moral authority. The thing is, the best, and I've seen people on the right, of course, say, oh, Obama's weak, he's just going to do some economic stuff, and it's not going to do anything. But what people have to realize is that Putin is a very strong person in Russia right now, but he's not strong in the sense of the old Soviet dictator strong, because the old Soviet dictators were basically backed by the military and by the entire governing structure. That's why they were strong leaders. Putin is strong because he's got the money people behind him in Russia. Basically, a lot of Russia is being controlled by Russian corporations and the Russian mob. And basically, Putin has told these people that if you support me staying in power, that I'm going to let you pretty much do whatever the hell you want to do and make money however the hell you want to make money. And so they've been basically backing him. The thing is that if the money people turned against Putin, then basically the Russian mob has enough money that they could basically buy the next election and put somebody else in there. So the thing is that the plan right now is to hit Russia economically. They've already announced visa restrictions for Russian nationals traveling to the U.S., and other European countries are following suit. Now, a lot of Russian businessmen and Russian mob and all that, they make a lot of money by jetting all over the world and making their deals and then bringing their money back to Russia where there's really no laws that are going to stop them from doing whatever the fuck they want to do. But there's talk of not only doing visa restrictions so they can't do that, but there's also talk that if Russia actually pulls the trigger and invades Ukraine, then basically the U.S. and the European Union and the Japanese and all those societies are going to freeze Russian assets. and basically put the screws on the money people in Russia. Now, that's the thing. If the money people in Russia think that invading Ukraine is going to mean that they can't travel around the world to make money and that the billions of dollars that they've got tied up in other economies is going to get frozen and basically taken away from them, they are the ones who are going to be able to put the pressure on Putin to be able to say, look, we've let you stay in here, but if you hurt our business this bad just because you want to show everybody what kind of a big dick you got, then we are going to definitely make sure in the next Russian election that, you know, that you are going to be on the outs. And if Putin decided that he was going to try to round these people up, it's too late because the money people have way too much influence in the military. The money people have way too much influence in the police. I really don't think that he could round up all the Russian mob. He's not that strong of a strong man.
Well,
he can't strike back against his enemies. So really hitting the Russians in the pocketbook is going to be the way to exert the kind of pressure on Putin to not be a dick when it comes to it.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's gotten away with so much shit right now. And I'm going to try to make this quick because we've only got like 4 minutes left. But this is the same motherfucker that sold Bob Kraft's Super Bowl ring right in front of him.
Yeah.
Motherfucker stole a fucking Super Bowl ring. He was like, you know, hey, I want to see that. Bob Kraft, you know, handed it over to him. He put it, you know, on his finger and looked at it, said it's heavy, took it off, put it in his pocket, and when Bob Kraft went to, like, say, hey, dude, that's my ring, he has a friggin' KGB or whatever, his bodyguards got in front of him, and he walked away.
Yep.
You know, that I think that's the problem. He thinks he has too much power. And personally, I want to see this bastard get smacked down a few pegs.
Right.
Because, you know,
not
only for that stuff, but, yeah, you're right. Hit them in the wallet. That's what worked with Arizona here. That's the only language these people speak.
Hit
them in their wallet, and they'll bend over.
And the people who are propping Putin up are going to be the ones who are going to say, okay, you got to change this, or else we're going to, you know, that basically the Russian mob already owns the next election. They could just decide to give it to someone else. And so that, like I said, so hit, you know, there's nobody's going to attack Russia with military might, no matter how badly John McCain wants to launch another fucking war. Nobody's going to go to war with Russia over the Ukraine. And so really all we can do is hit him in the pocketbook. But the visa restrictions are the important part, because if you present the Russians from flying all over the world to make all their money, that's going to hit them in ways that it's just going to make them go, okay, dude, your games are over. So, you know, they're going to call off the docks.
Yeah. It's insane. It's crazy. It's like people have just lost their fucking mind. speaking of which, we are down to 2 minutes. But it's, oh God, it's like, oh, there's so much to talk about. We need to have like 2 shows a month with you.
If y'all want me to come back in the middle of the month, just let me know and I'll put the time aside.
Well,
you know, I may, because, I mean, this is still unfolding.
Yep.
You know,
yes,
I was just looking through Facebook, and somebody posted something about an hour ago that says Crimean, and I know I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but the Crimean military post has taken over with no shots fired.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, we need to do, like, a second part to this. But in the meantime, I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to cut you off because we've got 90 seconds left.
Okay, well, thanks
for
having me on, guys. It's fun, and I look forward to talking to you all again.
We love
Absolutely.
You. We're glad
love
you're back.
On.
We're glad
Yay.
You're back. Yay.
Okay, party on, guys. You have a good one.
You too.
All right,
thanks,
you too. We'll
Allison.
Talk to you soon.
Oh, the pagan pundit.
I love him.
Love him. Oh, so glad he's back. Anyway,
I know.
You want to wrap it up? Wrap it up.
Yeah, because we've got like a minute left. Next week we will be back with Mr. Ian Corrigan, who's got some new goodies for you guys. Yay!
Yay.
And we will see you at 7 p.m. next Friday. The only exception, I think, is Jade. We're still waiting on him to see when he's coming back. But we love you guys. Great blessings. Hopefully the Mercury retrograde is straightening out for y'all, and the little bumps and bruises are starting to heal. But we love you guys, and we will talk to you all next week.
Bright blessings, everybody. Good night.
Night.